Hello, Francisco. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randy. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Lisbon in Portugal.
What is your earliest musical memory?
I think my earliest musical memory... I remember my father singing and playing the guitar for me and my sister. You know, maybe some Brazilian music, maybe some... Java. Oh, Maceió, é três mulheres para homem só. Oh, Maceió, é três mulheres para homem só. Eu fui batizado na capela do farol. Matriz de Santa Rita Maceió. Eu fui batizado na capela do farol. Matriz de Santa Rita Maceió. Something like that.
Now, your father was a huge influence on your life, and actually, later on when it came to playing guitar.
My father, his name is Luis. It's still a huge influence in my life and in my music. He's a person that used to be a musician, and he likes a lot of different kinds of music, except jazz. I don't know if he likes jazz very much, but he really loves Brazilian music and just like 60s rock and roll. And traditional fado music, and yeah, I've been exposed to a lot of different types of music since I'm very young, and I learned how to play. I mean, he showed me maybe some chords when I was probably like 3 or 4, I guess, and then I start to play more seriously later, I think, the guitar. But he's still a huge influence on me, and he's great. He's like one of my heroes.
What is fado?
Fado is a traditional Portuguese type of music. My father is a big fado singer, and he can play fado. I think fado means destiny. That's the meaning of it, of the word. Fado means destiny, your faith, your destiny. And it's like the Portuguese blues music. There's this great guitarist, fado guitarist, which I love. His name is Carlos Paredes. He made a record with Charlie Aden, I think, in the 70s, I believe, or the 80s, maybe. And he's just an amazing Portuguese guitar player. Yeah, so fado is that. I couldn't demonstrate because it would be really bad. I'm not a very good fado. I prefer bop, actually. So, but I really appreciate, I really like the music.
What kind of music did you listen to growing up?
Yes, I was exposed to a lot of music, not only through my father, but I had a rock band, and we used to play a lot of different kinds of music. We used to play Beatles, we used to play The Police, some tunes by The Cars, some Whitesnake, some Sting and The Police. We used to do a lot of Sting and Police. Yeah, and I think the music I play with my rock band when I was probably like 14 and 15, he influenced me a lot, and it's still music I really like, you know, like old good music, David Bowie and a Deep Purple and the Ramones, so many different things. I think we played a lot of different stuff, even Paul Simon and Garfunkel we used to play. So I guess all those artists that we did covers by, I think they influenced me a lot in a way. I still really like a lot of those artists, those musicians.
Let's talk a little about what happened to you in Paris in 1998.
Well, I was about to graduate from two of the best schools to learn jazz in Portugal. One is called Acorde Comigo, which is actually owned by my family, and I used to take lessons there and teach there when I was probably like 18 years old, yeah, I think so. And I used to study also at the Yacht Club in Lisbon, which is like probably one of the best also, and probably one of the only jazz schools in Portugal, at least the time I study. I think now there's a lot of schools. And I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to do music, so I decided to go do an audition, and I went to Paris in 1998 by myself with a backpack and my guitar in my back. And I went there. I stayed in Paris downtown with a friend of my family. And I went by myself to my audition, and Billy Pierce, which is an ex-jazz messenger with Art Blakey, did my audition together with other guys that I don't remember, but I now remember Billy Pierce. He's an amazing saxophonist. I remember I played alone together, the standard, and it went very well. It was. I don't know. I think it went well, and they were. I think I want to say impressed, but maybe I don't know. Maybe they were a little impressed about what they heard, and they liked it apparently, and they gave me a scholarship. So after I think a month later, I got a letter in Portugal saying that I could come to Berkeley because I got a scholarship, which was great, because if I didn't have a scholarship, Berkeley is a very expensive school to go to. It's very good, but it's expensive. So they gave me a very decent scholarship, I think 75% or 80% of the tuition, so it was a lot of money. And then later, I studied there for 4 years, my last 2 years. Because of my academic standing, they gave me a full ride. They gave me a full scholarship those last 2 years. So it was a turning point in my life, and it was very important because I mean the networking I did at Berkeley was very important in what I've become right now as a musician, and the people I hang out with and I play with have a lot to do with that.
Francesco, tell us a little bit about your experience at Berkeley.
Yeah, it was a great experience for me to be at Berkeley. Not so much the faculty, the teachers. My teachers were fantastic. They were very good, but the people I met, the musicians I met, and just playing sessions every single day, like sometimes 3 sessions a day, with like all kinds of musicians, it was something that really changed my whole concept of being a musician and I think the whole process, you know. So it was great. It was great. It was a great experience. For the people I met really amazing musicians and really amazing human beings there. So that's for that, and just for that, was worth it.
You must have studied with some pretty interesting people while you were at Berkeley.
Yeah, at Berkeley I studied with some really amazing people, and the people that I think really showed me things that I didn't know and that I really enjoy their classes was Mick Goodrick, Ed Tomasi, Hal Crook, George Garzon. Garzon was great. He's a great. He was a great, not a great teacher, but a great person to play with. He used to teach ensemble, and we used to close the lights for 2 hours of the ensemble room and just play free for 2 hours. It was fantastic to play with him. But I mean, Hal Crook, for example, is an amazing teacher. He's very, very good teacher. Very organized and very good overall. Mick Goodrick was a good guitar teacher. I learned a lot of stuff from him. I still need to go back and check out a lot of stuff he gave me that I kind of refuse while I study with him. Yeah, there was a lot of people. Ed Tomasi, Dave Santoro, those guys are like really great, like bebop teachers. They showed a lot of stuff, a lot of great stuff that I didn't know. I think I learned how to play a lot of stuff by being just hanging out with the people that could play the music, and also by having good teachers. Yeah.
Of all the people that you studied with at Berklee, who left the greatest impression on you?
From all the people that I studied at Berklee, the person that left the greatest impression on me was Hal Crook. Hal Crook is I still take lessons with him, and he's an amazing teacher. He's very good, so he's the best.
What is the Hot Club of Lisbon?
The Hot Club in Lisbon, it's both, it's a like an institution type thing. They have a jazz school, and they have a club. The club is like an underground tiny club, downtown Lisbon. And it's like one of the nicest places to play, because I mean everybody's totally on top of you when you're playing, so the feedback is right there, and everybody listens. Nobody's talking, and it's just a great club. I mean, it's like one of the best places to play, like smallest clubs in Lisbon. And you know, it's like there's a huge family there, and I consider myself a part of that family at the Hot Club. I go there play almost every summer when I go on tour or something. So, yeah, it's a great club. It's a great club. Very underground, very small, very characteristic, and a lot of character. And a lot of great musicians, all the best Portuguese jazz musicians hang out there.
What was it like after you graduated from Berklee and you went on that special tour of Europe?
Actually, before I graduated from Berklee, the 2 years before I graduated, those 2 years in a row, Berklee sponsored my band. And they paid plane tickets for everybody to go on tour to Europe, to Portugal actually, and to play. This was really good because I was not playing like big festivals or anything. I was playing like small clubs, so it's very hard to, you know, to get foreign musicians to come with you and play in those conditions. So it was a great help from Berklee. You know, they paid our plane tickets. And a plane ticket during the summer to Europe, it's like $1,000 sometimes in August. And it was very helpful, you know. So we toured mainly in Portugal, in Porto and in Algarve, which is the south, during those 2 years. And the band was very good. It was very, very good. Ferenc Németh, the drummer in my record, and I used to bring Leo Genovesi, also the Argentinian piano player that plays in my record, Not Afraid of Color. And also, I used to, I mean, I guess actually those first 2 years, I used on piano Albert Sanz, which is another great guitarist from Valencia, from Spain, and it's a good friend of mine. So it was good. It was great. It was great. It was not like a tour, a deluxe tour. We had the limousine waiting for us at the airport, you know. It was a little bit tougher than that, but it was a lot of fun. We spent a lot of time on the road, me driving, and we just, you know, just play gigs for like 50 euros or 75 euros a night, and that's it. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and the music developed a lot during those tours, and the musicians I brought to Portugal, I mean, I was very lucky to play with them. They were killing, very good musicians. So it was great.
Who do you consider the main influences on your guitar playing?
My main influences on the guitar, I mean, they're like just infinite. I have a lot of influences. Right now I'm listening to Django Reinhardt and Lenny Bro. I just discovered Lenny Bro not long ago, and he's a really amazing guitarist. I think he's ridiculous. Ted Green, Jim Hall, Wes Montgomery, Charlie Christian, Eddie Lang, Billy Bauer, Tal Farlow, Kenny Burrell. Did I say Jim Hall? Yeah, Jim Hall. He's like huge. I love Jim Hall. It's amazing. I just saw him duo with Dave Holland, and he's so amazing. He's still like the most modern guitarist in the world. There's nobody that beats him. He's so amazing. He's not afraid of anything. I'm sure he's not afraid of color. there's a lot of guitarists. I really like this guy, this Brazilian guitarist, Aris Moraes Espírito Santo. He's a 7-string choro guitar player. I love Hermeto Pascoal playing guitar. I like Romero Lubambo. I like Kurt Rosenwinkel. He's great. Jesse Van Ruler, Martin van der Gritten. I mean, the list is just infinite. David Doruska is one of my favorite guitarists. He went to Berkeley with me. He's really amazing. But a lot of influences. I think in my playing, I don't know what are my influences. Maybe all these people mixed up. I mean, it's probably all the music I hear.
What about Pat?
Oh, did I forgot to mention Pat? Yeah, Pat Metheny influenced me also. I don't hear his music much right now, but I'm sure he influenced me. John Abercrombie, Schofield, of course. So I think that's enough. I can give you much more if you want.
If there was only one musician that you could tour with and even maybe record with, who would that be?
I don't know if it's a musician that it's still alive. I would choose Hermeto Pascoal. And if it's a musician that it's dead, I would choose Train, John Coltrane. But this is a really tough question. This is really tough.
What is the jazz scene like around Portugal?
The jazz scene in Portugal is pretty good. I mean, there's very good musicians, jazz musicians. Especially, there's very good guitar players. There's really great guitarists. Most of them, I mean, were my teachers, and they are my friends. But there's some really healthy scene. The level is pretty high. There's really great guitarists, and there is I think we're missing some bass players in Portugal. Oh, now actually, Damien Cabo, an Argentinian bass player, moved there, and he's pretty good. He's great. Yeah, but the jazz scene is great. I mean, there's probably like 20 or 25 festivals there every year. The only problem is it's very hard to to get to play the festivals there because it's always the same, like, you know, the older musicians, which are really good and I really respect, they have priority, I guess, over the younger musicians. So it's kind of tough, you know. It's a tough thing to get like work, like high level performances there. But it's great. It's a great scene in Portugal.
How did your band come together?
Yeah, I did know the members of my band for a long time. Ferenc Nemeth, the drummer, it's probably the longest one, and I guess the only one that it's been with me since the beginning. He was the one that helped shape a lot of my music together with me. He's an incredible drummer. He went to Berkeley at the same time I did, and I used to live with this amazing bass player from Italy called Daniele Camarda. He's like really amazing, probably the best electric bass player in the world. He's amazing. And Ferenc used to live right next building, so he was in our house all the time. We're like really, really close friends. Me, Daniele, this Italian guy that lived with me, and Ferenc. And we used to play a lot. I did know Ferenc. Leo, I met him at Berkeley also, and Leo is just an amazing, new voice. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's a genius. That guy is a genius musician, and he's a very creative and not afraid artist. So, and he's a great person. I think one of the big things about my band is that I really like to choose people not only for what they play, but I like to share my music with people that have no pretentiousness and attitude. I like it to be as real and as raw as it can. That's a very important thing for me, and I think these guys portray that a lot. That's why I choose them to play with me. Ferenc is like the biggest. Massimo Bilocati, I met him at Berkeley, used to play. We didn't play a lot at Berkeley, but he moved to New York now with Ferenc, and they're both living in Brooklyn. And Ferenc has been playing a lot with him. So Ferenc suggested him to me for the recording, and I agreed, and I said, you know, this guy's really competent, he's really great. So we're not like close friends like with Ferenc, like I am with Ferenc or Leo. It's just, I think he came because he's been playing with Ferenc a lot, and they play well together, you know, they really are tight together, and that's very important for me. I normally use a couple of other bass players, and I think Massimo is in the list, and he's a great guy also. Now Chris Cheek, the horn player, he's been playing also some gigs with Ferenc, and he suggested, you know, why don't you call Chris? He's a very experienced saxophonist. He doesn't sound like anybody else. He's very original, so he would be a perfect guy to play your music, and it was great. It was I called Chris. Chris is also a really, really a simple guy. Really, really. I don't know. He's. I mean, he doesn't intimidate you. You can speak to him. He's the nicest guy in the world. He's very nice, and. I just feel that, I mean, with the band I put together for this record, I mean, I've been playing with them for a while, especially Leo and Ferenc for a while, with Ferenc for almost 10 years now, and with Leo for probably almost 6 or 7 years. And with Chris, more recent, I met him more recently, and Massimo also. But I'm really grateful that they played my music the way I want it to be played, and I'm really grateful that I was able to share this project with them. They're unbelievable.
If you had an opportunity to form a dream band, who would it consist of?
I'm going to give you two dream bands. One dream band is people that are still alive, and another dream band is people that are already dead. From people that are already dead, my band would be John Coltrane, would be Train, Bill Evans, and then on the bass, PC, Paul Chambers, and on the drums, I'll probably get maybe Art Taylor. That'd be amazing. I don't know what I would play with those guys, but that would be pretty amazing. And for a more contemporary and people that are a live band, I think I would pick a band, Bjork on vocals, Brian Blade on the drums, Dave Holland on bass. I'd probably call Ermeto Pasquale. And I'll probably add another vocalist, maybe Milton Nascimento, which is a Brazilian. Together with Bjork, that would be a great combination. Who else? Me on guitar, of course. And I think that would be my dream band. That'd be pretty amazing. Oh, maybe Brad could sit in some tunes and play piano. Brad Meldow. Yeah, definitely. That's it.
What are your 10 favorite records?
My favorite 10 albums are Arvo Part, Tabula Rasa, Ermeto Pasquale, Mundo Verde Esperança, Places by Brad Meldow, Explorations by Bill Evans, Edu Lobo and Tom Jobim, and the name of the record is Edu and Tom, In and Out by Joe Anderson, Soul Train by Coltrane. That's really tough to pick just one Coltrane record. That's like impossible. Miles Smiles by Miles Davis, the quintet with Irby and Wayne. It's a great record. Speak Like a Child by Irby Hancock. And then Thelonious Monk and John Coltrane, Monk and Train. Yeah, I think these records are my favorite 10 records of all time. I'm really checking out a lot of music lately, contemporary classical music especially. But it's something that changes, in my opinion. It changes. Maybe next month my 10 favorite albums are different. But these ones that I just said, they're pretty amazing records.
At the beginning of the interview, you talked about the influence that your father had on your musical life. I was just curious. I forgot to ask you, but was he a musician?
My father was a musician. When he was younger, yeah, he was a musician. He had a band when he was like 18 years old, and it was actually a pretty famous band in Portugal, a rock band called Black Diamonds. It's actually, I translated the name, it's called Diamantes Negros, which is the name of the band. And they used to play a lot of Beatles covers, and it was a very good band. He used to play electric bass, and he used to sing on that band. So yeah, he's a musician. And right now he still has that band. They still get together, I think, a revival band. And Yeah, he's a great musician, yeah.
Now, after studying at Berklee, I would imagine that you were eager to get your own recording off the ground. Now, when you were recording Not Afraid of Color, did you have any preconceived ideas of what you wanted the recording to be?
After I toured with my band and I decided to do a recording with this music, it made a lot of sense, because I've been playing some of the music from this record, the Not Afraid of Color, we've been playing this for a while, some of this music, just the last tune on the record, Charmed. It's a fairly recent song. The other songs were songs that we played a lot as a band on tour, and they kind of grew and they kind of develop, and I noticed that I really needed to document this. And I have an idea of my first recording. I had an idea how I wanted the recording to sound like. I think I'm pretty happy with the results. I wanted to pick very specific instrumentation and very specific musicians to play this music. And it went very well. I think I'm very proud of this recording. I think it documented very well a period, a transitional period of my development as a musician. And I'm looking forward to just keep creating and keep playing music with people that inspire me and that make me create and enhance the music I write.
Did you have to go through a long process while you were recording this album?
It took 5 hours on a Saturday and 4 hours on a Sunday, so I guess 9 hours to record my record. We played 3 takes of each song. I brought a lot of music to the studio because I was experimenting with a lot of tunes that I wrote. So I brought 15 tunes to the recording studio because I wanted to have a lot of music and I didn't want to play more than 3 takes or 4 takes maximum in each song. I wanted to be as real as it could. We played live, obviously. There's no overdubs anywhere. Most of the tunes, I'm pretty sure, Water from the Moon, Tides, Lift Your Head from the Sand and Face Reality, and Gratitude are first takes. The rest are second takes. So there's not even a third take. They're all first takes and second takes. Before the recording was made, it took the band 2 afternoons. We rehearsed in the drummer's kitchen in Brooklyn, New York. that was great. We're all like cramped into Ferenc's room and kitchen in Brooklyn. It was crazy. And we rehearsed there for 2 weekends in a row. 2 weekends, yeah. I drove to New York and we rehearsed there. And then finally, the following weekend after that, we went to the studio and we recorded. It was great. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely a very unique experience to rehearse in a kitchen in Brooklyn.
Are you living in Portugal at the moment?
I'm not living in Portugal right now. I just came from Portugal recently. I went there for 5 days. I'm living in Boston, in downtown Boston. And I teach in a school in Providence, Rhode Island. I teach improvisation. And I'm living in Boston downtown right now. Yeah.
Is there a special method that you use when you're composing music?
When I'm composing music, I don't have a specific method. I start playing randomly singing randomly, and if I like what I hear, I try to write it down on a piece of paper. So I have lots and lots of notebooks with a lot of just small ideas. And I guess I just try to search by improvising, by improvising. So I don't use a specific method. I guess I just try to look for something true that comes out of an improvisation, really, and then I try to put it down on paper because I really like the sound of it.
When it comes to composing, who are your main influences?
As a composer, my biggest influences are, I think, everybody. I listen to so much music. I mean, so many different people. I think a lot of classical composers are being an influence. I really like Schnittke. I really like Arvo Part. I really like classical composers like Gorecki, Dmitri Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Debussy, and then I really love Hermeto's approach to composition also. I think it's amazing. I love I love Mark Turner's tunes. I think he's amazing. There's a record called Fly. I think the tunes there are just beautiful. I love Gil Femma with a guitarist named Lionel Loeche. Really amazing. And also I really love the compositions by a guitarist, a friend of mine, called David Doruska. I think he's an amazing composer. David Doruska, yeah. But I guess I have lots of influences. I try to study and try to practice different kinds of music and try to understand what kind of approaches or what kind of thinking the composer had in order to achieve the effect that a specific tune has, and I try to follow that. I try to capture that. That's one of my main goals, I guess. Yeah.
One aspect of your recording that really appealed to me was the way that each tune takes the listener on a journey, and the musical journey is intriguing, a lot of twists and turns and fresh creativity.
You think my music takes the listener on a journey? Well, that's That's great, because I think that's what I try to do when I compose. I want to try to take the listener on a journey. That's exactly what I try to do, and try to give a message about the moment, I guess. And normally if I'm surrounded by people that are great musicians, I really feel inspired by it. And I think it's all about responding to a particular moment in time, and just try to build intensity or release in that moment. And it's one of the best feelings in the world to do that. But I really like to take the listener on a journey, like you say. I think that's a great way of putting it. And that's one of the things that I want to keep doing for the rest of my life. Take listeners on journeys with me and with the rest of the band. And it's great. I'm glad that I can do that.
I think my favorite track from your album is Water from the Moon. I like the way that there's a certain cadence throughout the tune that builds, and the intensity just reaches a level, and then you execute some fine creativity with the rest of the band, which I find is very enlightening.
Water from the Moon, it's a tune that I wrote, which it's great live, because you can really stretch. It's a great tune to stretch, you know. So Water from the Moon is a tune that I wrote that it's based on layers of composition. And those layers are divided and are subdivided in different ways that I chose in order to make the composition effective, I guess. So the first main part, the A section of Water from the Moon, is this. Section of and this is the main, most important melody from the song that I want the listener to remember. Obviously I was not playing in tempo, I was just playing to show you. I was playing kind of rubato, and then after that I choose to do another completely different section with a completely different tempo, with a new tempo, and the way I choose to do the transition between A section and B section is to through just having Ferenc, the drummer, stop the tempo and let him choose what is the new tempo. Of course we rehearse that and he knows what tempo I'm looking for. So then he starts a tempo, and Leo comes in with Rhodes, and Massimo comes in with the bass, and they start to play a four-measure vamp. That four-measure vamp is in just a B-flat harmonic minor scale, and I just use like this chord, and this chord, and that chord. And Ferenc obviously is playing a killing drum and bass groove on top of that. Okay, so then on the B section, I wrote three different lines, and I put numbers on those lines. So there's line number one, line number two, and line number three. Line number one is this one. Line number two, it's just a chromatic line that I use descending with Chris. It's pretty simple, I guess, to play on the guitar. And it's more like, I think I want to create more of an effect with this line than anything else. So it's, you know, a descending kind of weird effect, I guess that's what I'm looking for. And finally, over the same vamp, so these lines are I play them giving a cue to Chris, looking at him in the studio, and you know, I look at him and say, okay, let's go next one, and you know, we play them all in a row. But for example, if I was playing Water from the Moon in a concert, I can play line two and then tell whoever is playing with me to play line one again, the lines, you know, so I can switch, and we can, in the middle of the solos, also add the lines, so it's like part of the song, okay? And the last line is just like a, it's just like a regular kind of symmetrical augmented and diminished line. That I use over the same vamp, this vamp, okay? So, yeah, Water from the Moon is like that. And then what happens is that me and Chris Cheek, we start soloing at the same time. So it's a collective improvisation, okay? So then, after we play the bridge and the phrase 1, 2, and 3, we do a solo, collective improvisation. It was great because this was the first take, and we actually play play a knee flat together right at the same time, which is was a great feeling. In the right in the beginning of the solo, we play a knee flat. We play the exact same note at the exact same time, so it was great. That little moment, I think, made up for the whole record. And yeah, and then after that, after we solo, we do collective improvisation. After that, we stop playing, and the tempo kind of breaks down again. So, non-existing tempo. We kind of get rid of the tempo again. I make sure Ferenc stops the flow of the tempo that we had before, and we have a Fender Rhodes solo with distortion. Which was a great idea that Leo had, and of course I was totally into it. And while he's burning, you know, like making his solo on the Rhodes with distortion, over that non-tempo thing, I start to layer back the A section, which is the first thing that the listener heard. And that's it. That's how it it all came together. And that's normally how we play it live, you know. It goes sometimes even into a free section, which is great fun. You never know what can happen. So many things can happen when you play with these people, with guys like this. They're so amazing. It's great fun.
When you decided to record your album, did you want it to make it all original material, or did you think of maybe throwing in some covers for a good measure.
Yeah, when I decided to record my record, I was pretty clear. It was pretty clear to me that I just wanted to play original music. I didn't even consider playing any cover.
Pat Metheny is such a master musician. What was the main thing that you learned from his playing?
One of the most important things I learned from Pat Metheny is to learn how to be myself and don't try to be Pat Metheny or anybody else. I just want to try to be myself and try to follow the things that are meaningful to me. And I respect a lot Pat Metheny. I think he's great. I don't listen much to his music anymore. I have all his records. I don't listen to them anymore. I respect him a lot. I think he's a master. I think he's great. But I want to follow my own thing.
Will you be performing much this year?
I'll be performing. I'm trying to get some gigs together in Boston, where I live, which is extremely hard. Because the industry, it looks like, at least for small clubs, it's really messed up. Now they have these places in Boston that you need to rent in order to showcase your band. So there are no more the club that you can go and make $30. You have to go and rent the place. You have to do flyers, put them up, ask a cover charge. And it's really tough, but I'll be performing in the summer. I have some gigs in Portugal, at the Hot Club. I'll be playing in I'm waiting for some answers, about some jazz festivals in Portugal during the time I'll be there. And I'm waiting for some answers for some jazz festivals also, here in the US and in Belgium also. So I'm trying to get some stuff together. I need a booking agent. I think that's what I need. Definitely a booking agent.
Do you practice a lot?
Yeah, I do practice. I try to play at least 3 hours every day to keep myself in shape. I've been working on some chords. Like spread cluster chords. Some chords I normally grab maybe a scale and try to practice that scale, maybe diminished scale. Try to try to improvise on that scale, I guess. Yeah, look for sounds and chords that I like within that scale. This sound or this sound. Just try to explore.
Do you remember the first jazz concert that you ever saw?
The first jazz concert that I've scene was actually my guitar teacher, my first great teacher, Mario Delgado. He played in trio in Not Club, and it was beautiful. Mario was a great mentor for me. He's a great guitarist in the Bill Frisell aesthetic kind of thing. And it was a great concert. It was in Not Club, in that small basement club, and they played some monk music. It was really beautiful. It was a great concert. It was the first concert I've seen.
What was the best concert that you ever saw?
One of the best concerts I've ever seen, and the one that really just blew me away, was Ermeto Pascoal, and it was actually this summer. And I've been seeing like a lot of music. I was really surprised. I was really blown away by Ermeto. He's amazing. It was a great concert. That guy is a genius.
I have to agree with you on that. You know, many years ago in Montreal, I saw Ermeto Pascoal, and he just blew me away. I mean, I just couldn't believe the intensity and the musicality that comes out of this musician is awesome. He's such a gift to the music world.
I would love to play with him. He's amazing. So ridiculous. Amazing. That was one of the concerts. I saw Brad Meldow solo. And that was a concert that really also touched my heart a lot. It was unbelievable. I think Brad is at a level that it's very impressive, unbelievable, really beautiful.
Will you be recording a follow-up to your latest CD in the near future?
I'm thinking of doing a new CD. I'm thinking of doing a recording this summer. This upcoming summer, or maybe by the end of the summer. And I'm still thinking, I'm writing a lot of music. I have a lot of music written, ready to be recorded. I just want to try to find out what kind of instrumentation, because I'm writing music for a bigger ensemble, like a 10-piece ensemble, and I'm writing music also for a chorale kind of thing. And I'm also just writing music for, I think, a quintet or a quartet. So I have a lot of music, and I really want to do a follow-up CD soon. So I think very soon, yeah, very, very, very soon I'll be recording some stuff.
Before I let you go, what kind of equipment are you using these days?
I have different kinds of guitars that I use in Not Afraid of Color. My main guitar that I use in almost every song, it's a Guild SF 400, Starfire 400, and Guild is a great guitar. It's a semi hollow body, and I really love the sound, the warmness of it. I feel like that's my guitar. It's great. I have that guitar for probably 10 years or more now, and it's just great. I love the sound of it. The other guitar I use, it's on the record, on Always Dreaming and Desert of Colors. It's a Gibson ES-325 stereo Gibson guitar. Oh, no stereo, no, it's not a stereo, it's just a Gibson ES-325. And it's great, it's very nice, I really like it. It's very similar, the kind of... the kind of touch and the sound of a Guild guitar. And recently I just got a Archtop, a Martin, and I'm really loving it. I'm still kind of learning how to play with this sound, and I really like it. It's beautiful. And I use flat wound strings. And my amplifier is a vintage Polytone amplifier, which I love. I really like the sound of it. I use another amp when I'm on tour, and I'm going to start to record with that amp, which I actually prefer than the Polytone, which is a Vox AC30. It was my father's amplifier, and I really want to start using that, because actually we're right now... rebuilding it, like with all the vintage pieces and the sound, which is unbelievable, really powerful sound. But you know, we're like pimping it, making it look really nice, and spending some money because it's worth it. And the sound of it, it's just amazing. So my amp will be a Vox AC30. It's a great amplifier. That's my favorite. And then I have a classical guitar made by Paco de Lucia. He has a brand of guitars now. And I have a kind of a classical guitar that I just got recently. Very, very nice sounding. I have also another classical guitar. And these guitars, by the way, are not in the recording, Not Afraid of Color. I have Francisco Esteve, which is a Spanish guitar, classical guitar also, very good, very nice sounding, very warm. Great to play like Brazilian stuff. It's really nice. And I have Echo, an Italian guitar, really nice rock guitar. And that's it. That's what I have for now. I have a Portuguese guitar, which I don't play, and I need to learn how to play. And that's it for now. I should get a tele or something, you know. Equipment I'm using. I don't use any effects. I'm using actually the Lexicon MPX 100, I think, in the recording, and my pedal, my distortion pedal, which is a rat, got broken in the studio, and Peter Carl, the guy that the studio guy, he gave me the engineer, he gave me a Boss pedal, he lended me. So I used that on the recording, which is not, you know, it's not the best sounding distortion, but it was okay. It did the job. That's it. I'm trying to try to play with the sound of my guitar and my amp lately. I don't know. I'm sure I'll be using maybe some delay and reverb because I like it, the sound of it, but. I think much less than on this recording in the near future.
Well, I just want to thank you for dropping by today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you and sharing your ideas with us. Thank you very much.
Hey, Randy, thank you very much for having me on your show. It was a great pleasure to share some of my thoughts and feelings and ideas with you. Thanks very much.